You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is Dr. Gregory Rocha. Dr. Rocha, of course, is no stranger to KTUP, good friend of the station. Retired professor, he still comes back once in a while, teaches one or two classes just to keep the students honest. We're going to talk a little bit about, what happened this week, the primary we had on Tuesday, and there were some surprises. Some people said they were not surprised, but perhaps, Greg, well, first of all, thank you for being with us.
And thank you for inviting me, Louis.
I think perhaps the one that a lot of people were surprised with was the 16th Congressional District, and not that Mrs. Escobar won, but the fact that there was no runoff with so many candidates there.
That's true, Louis, and I think, frankly, I was very surprised Ms. Fenenbach didn't do as good as she did. Particularly, she started early, she's well-known, she had a fair amount of money, she campaigned pretty extensively and was out there. But on the other hand, Louis, I think you could see as it got closer and closer to Election Day, she realized she was well behind and started to campaign much more aggressively. And I'm not sure that really works here all that well. And regardless, she just couldn't close that gap and therefore didn't do as well as we expected.
Well, there were some last-minute people jumping in, and Norma Chavez was one of those. And some people thought that perhaps with her jumping in so late that things may not work out. And as it turns out, Mrs. Escobar won, 63% of the vote?
I believe that Norma Chavez got maybe about 5 or 6%. And again, Louis, that just goes to show how difficult it is for somebody who's already been in the electoral arena to try to jump back in. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. And there are any number of other candidates who held elected office, either were defeated or quit and retired and tried to come back and didn't make it, which, you know, speaking locally, is one of the interesting things about the county judge race, because here again we see John Cook, the one-time mayor, trying to get himself back again into the electoral arena as a county judge. He's in the runoff, so we'll see how it goes. But again, overall, it's generally a pretty tough thing to do.
Let's talk a little bit about what you just mentioned, former Mayor Cook trying to get back into the arena. Some people have mentioned that in some cases, our political arena is almost like watching old TV reruns because the characters never change. They just keep going, being repetitive, you know, from one race to the other. And is it because we have a small contingency of people who are interested in politics, or is it that these people have already pretty much locked in their positions?
Louis, I don't think it's all that different from anywhere else. One of the things I've noted here and elsewhere is that once you get in, you tend to stay, and that's the power of incumbency. And the reason why Mayor Cook couldn't continue as mayor, of course, is that there are term limits on that. If he were to become county judge, where there are no term limits, then perhaps he could stay much longer. But it is tough to beat an incumbent, and incumbency means quite a bit here. And every now and then, Louis, we do have these open races where we've got a lot of seats that are up for grabs, and that brings out a lot of interest here. The last time that we saw this kind of activity like we saw here goes back about 20 years ago to 1996. There we saw state senator, U.S. member of Congress, some important county commissioner seats, and therefore it's, you know, happens now and then that we, again, get some interest in other people coming in here. But for the most part, it is pretty much controlled by incumbents.
We have been talking a little bit about the local races, and we're going to continue talking about local races, but let's go back now to state races. And let's talk a little bit about some of those positions that were up for grabs during this primary.
Yeah, Louis, I think generally there was all this talk, given all that's happened since 2016 and the surge that we've seen among Democrats in various states, well, with that spillover into this state. And it did in many ways. We saw a lot of trends taking place that we've noted elsewhere with the rise of women, increasing number of Democratic votes, you know, in elections and so forth. But once we tally up the votes, Louis, there were still more Republicans who voted in that primary than in the Democratic primary. I think it was like 1.5 to 1.3 million compared to both. So you know, the Republicans are out there. This is a deeply conservative state, socially, politically, and economically, and is the most important state for the Republican Party. So going forward, I suspect we're going to see all Democratic candidates face a very, very powerful charge from the Republicans who want to maintain control and hegemony of Texas. But at least the part of the landscape has been laid for the November elections, like you said. And we'll see if Democrats are able to take advantage of that.
And as you mentioned earlier, as far as, you know, the demographics and the party affiliation, as far as Texas goes, there was a lot of talk on social media, especially with Beto O'Rourke doing so well in the primary, the fact that Texas could very well be turning blue. Is that kind of wishful thinking, or is that something that could happen? I mean, anything could happen, as we found out in 216. But the fact that because there have been so many people voting the same way, and their parents do it, their children, etc., is that going to be hard to accomplish, or can it be done?
Lou, he certainly has a huge challenge out there. And he's been out campaigning in places where Democrats haven't been in a long time. And I think he's well aware of the need for him to get out there and get his name out. And he's done that. And you can see, Louis, the mere fact that I think he got two-thirds of the vote in the Senate race. Ted Cruz, by contrast, got about 80-85% of the vote among Republicans. Well, again, Mr. O'Rourke is still out there trying to introduce himself and get himself known. And he's not taking money from PACs or corporations, so that puts him in a different kind of bind. But more than that, Louis, I think he's going to have to face what I call the full fury of the Republican Party, because they don't want a Democrat winning a statewide election now or sometime into the future. And I wouldn't be surprised if we were to sit down and talk frankly to some leaders of the Republican Party. One of the things they'd say is it's not just enough for Ted Cruz or the governor to win. They have to win decisively. And Beto O'Rourke needs to be beaten the same way that Wendy Davis was beaten and the same way that Tony Sanchez was beaten, because this is Texas. It's the most important state to the Republican Party. It embodies everything that the Republican Party stands for. And the Democrats might think that they're going to make some headway here, but no, they're not. And so, again, I think this election means it's going to be very, very tough for O'Rourke and the other Democrats as they face all of the resources and challenges that the Republicans put forth.
So what do the Republicans need to do to make sure they don't get, for lack of a better word, lazy, kind of just laying back and sitting on their laurels, not worrying about the 2018 elections in November? And what do Democrats have to do to make sure they take advantage of if the Republicans do that?
Yeah, I think we've already seen Ted Cruz put out some music and some other things about trying to jab at not just O'Rourke, but at the Democratic Party and what it stands for and how it's not the way things are done here in Texas. And that resonates fairly well in certain parts of the state. And if they can mobilize the same way that they have in the past, I think they're going to be pretty successful. The onus, as I see it, really rests with the Democrats. And how do you make sure that the enthusiasm that was here the other day carries itself through at least to November, and that this excitement that exists still takes place? I think that's the big challenge. It's getting people to vote. It was done fairly easily, again, a few days ago. Can that be done in November? It may well, Louis. We've seen this is a very, very unusual political season that we've had over this past year and year and a half almost. So maybe there still are some things out there that can be done to mobilize the Democrats and keep them enthused.
And you, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, the fact that you've retired as a professor, you still teach one class once in a while, but you dealt with a lot of students and you worked with a lot of students during election, doing exit polling and different types of polls like that. And we've seen recently, especially what happened with that tragic incident in Florida at the high school, that a lot of the students were coming out, marching, putting out signs and stuff like that. Yet some of the critics are saying, well, that's all good and dandy, but a lot of you who may be seniors and have turned 18 are staying away from the polls.
Yeah, again, that's the big challenge for the Democratic Party, is to get that young demographic out there. Interesting, Louis, that you mentioned that when O'Rourke first ran for Congress here, one of the things that he did is he targeted those younger voters and held kind of rallies and, you know, any number of other kinds of activities to make sure that they were engaged and interested. Can you do that statewide? That's looks to be quite a big challenge. This is a big state and quite a bit different. But to get onto campuses and to do this sort of thing is makes it seem possible. But again, I'm sure he's going to go up against a sizable amount of Republican money and concern by just rank and file Republicans who just don't think this is the way to go in terms of policy.
Tell us about the numbers that we had here in El Paso. Is it pretty much what you expected, and how does that compare to, say, 2016 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, we had a pretty big turnout, Louis, with about 15% of voters turning out for this primary. It's been higher than the past several elections, again, when we look at midterm elections. And it's about the same as what we saw statewide, maybe a little bit more, not all that much, but pretty close to it. And in great part, Louis, that's because we see our primaries as the true deciders of who's going to hold electoral offices, especially locally. I think you have to make, for instance, Veronica Escobar is a very, very heavy favorite. She got through the Democratic primary. The Democrats are very strong here, and therefore she seems to have things well in hand. Same thing is going to be true for people like the county judge or other races that are out there. Again, it's just too much Democratic Party strength. So people tend to come out again in the primaries here. Can you get more people out? It's going to be very tough to do.
Some people who were registered as Republican crossed over to vote in the Democratic primary because they wanted to have their say-so, and especially the congressional race. What happens when some of those people step into those booths and they vote for whatever race they're interested, but then they just leave the other ones blank?
Those are, of course, our undervotes. And the kind of interesting thing about that is that if we go what's called down ballot, further away from the start of the ballot, where there are tend to be judicial races, for instance, you can look at the total number of people who at least have the opportunity to cast a vote and the number of votes for candidates. And then there's this large undervote of people who don't cast votes. And that's true both for Democrats as well. We've got a long ballot. And at least theoretically, you can say that, Jesus, isn't this great that voters have the chance to choose judges? But if you don't study and look that up and put the effort to do that, what's the value of that? Again, there's no perfect election system, and you can see the strength and the weaknesses there. But those are undervotes, and they tend to be manifested mostly in the judicial races.
How long can people go to the election department and webpage and find out more about that?
Well, you can find it out right away, Louis. That's the great thing about technology. You can get this information immediately. Just go, again, to the elections department at the county office, and you can get our countywide elections, and then go to the Secretary of State and into their elections section, and you can get statewide totals as well.
Greg, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Louis.
We've been visiting with Dr. Gregory Rocha, political scientist, talking about what happened this week in the primary here in Texas and what he suspects may happen in November of 2018 when we have the midterm elections. Again, Greg, thank you so much for being with us. Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTEP studio, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sainz.